And while Musa Sheikh Sahib was talking, and in Asik Isra questioned, where is that hand? You know, at that time, my mind went straight back to the final farman of the Golden Jubilee. You all remember that very emotional farman where the Imam says, this day I put my hand on the shoulder of every murid around the world. I think you will all recall that farman, yes? And, you know, because we really never reflect on the sort of words the Imam uses. And anybody could say, how can Imam have his hand on the shoulder of 20 million Ismailis scattered in more than 60 countries? It's through Bayya. That same thing that Allah's hand is upon their hands, when in reality, physically, on this planet Earth, it was the Prophet's hand. But it is Allah Ta'ala himself who gives the Prophet's hand the status of Allah's hand. Just as the face of Allah is the face of the Imam, the tongue of Allah will be the tongue of the Imam, the shin of Allah will be the shin of Imam, the hand of Allah will be the hand of Imam, the eyes of Allah will be the eyes of the Imam. It's a very crucial point, this one. And the whole of the Ismaili Tariqah, you know, rests on this point, right? Whereas amongst the other Muslims, they are completely, you know, they either accept the anthropomorphic verses and then reject the ones which are about Qul Huwallahu Ahad, or they accept the Qul Huwallahu Ahad and reject the anthropomorphic verses. The Ismailis are the only community who can reconcile both aspects of the Holy Quran. I have made a very important statement. The Ismailis, no matter how small a community, we are the only community who can reconcile both aspects. The absolute aspect, the pure aspect, as well as the attributes, the physical characteristics. Others reject half the Quran. We don't do that. Throughout history, we have never done that, okay? So that is a very important point. Now today we go on to the fifth part, and I think you have by now noticed that the way the dua is structured is that it always begins with something from the Holy Quran, either a small surah or ayats, yes, or parts of ayats, like in the second part of the dua. So today also our dua, fifth part, begins with Ya ayyuhallazina amanu la takunu lafa warrasula wa takunu amanatikum wa antum talamun. I hope you notice my emphasis there. Rasula, ending with an A. Because this is another very, very common, a very dangerous mistake which the Jamaat is making. In the third part of our dua, it is Ya Ayyuha Rasulu, because the Prophet is being addressed by God. So in the third part, it is definitely Rasulu. But you cannot say Rasula here. If you do, you are actually making the meaning completely wrong. So if you are doing that, please correct yourself and correct anybody else in the Jamaat who is ready and humble enough to listen to you. La takunu laha warrasula wa takunu amanatikum wa antum talamu. And you can ask, you know, you can show it in the Quran. It's in Surah Anfal, Surah 8, ayat number 27. It's exactly written like that. Ya takunu laha warrasula. Okay, and this word, amanatikum. So amanat is, we are being told that we should not betray the trust, plural, of Allah and the Prophet, right? So here, we have to look at the word trust in this context, because they are the trust of Allah and the Prophet. And this is exactly like the ayat which was in the second part of the dua. Ya ayyuhallazina amanu atti'ullaha wa atti'ur rasul wa ulil amri minkum fa in tanaza'tum fi, etc. If you have a dispute, turn to Allah and the Prophet. Remember that ayat, which we looked at in great detail? So here also these two are together, Allah and the Prophet. So now, let's first of all define the word trust. Yeah? You know that one of the titles, the Prophet had two particular titles from the community in which he lived. They called him Al-Amin, the trustworthy, and As-Sadiq, the truthful one, the one who never ever told a lie. So Al-Amin, the word Amin and Amana, you know, same root, trustworthy. What is trust? So first we want to take a very mundane human example. Supposing that a friend of yours, a good friend of yours, yeah, or a member of your extended family, they are going away somewhere and they leave a box of jewelry or something very precious, valuable, with you. And they go away for 2, 3, 4, 5 months. And when they come back, one of two things can happen. No, maybe one of three things. There are three options. Either you return the entire box to them, in which case you have fulfilled your trust, or you can say, oh no, you didn't leave anything with me. You completely deny it and say, no, you didn't leave anything with me. Then what have you done? You have done the opposite of amana. You have done khianat, right? It's called khiana, right? Or the third option is, you could have removed some things from that box and returned some of the things. And that is also breaking the trust, because you didn't give it back just as it had been left with you. Correct? So now, what am I trying to tell you with this example? That one of the options here is that you can say, no, 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 you didn't leave anything with me. And in other words, you are saying, I'm the rightful owner of that valuable stuff. This is a very great sin. It's a very great sin, even in our own human circumstances, right? It's not a question of returning part of it. All of it doesn't belong to you. All of it belongs to somebody else. I'm emphasizing this because one of our group members is not able to attend today because she's working, but she's asked me to clarify whether the sand is an amanat. That's why I am, you know, emphasizing that, you know, the sand is only part of our income. It's not like that. You can't, if somebody gives you a trust, you have to completely return it, not part of it. So here, first of all, the trusts are the trusts of Allah and the Prophet. So what are these trusts? There are two of them. There are just two trusts. So let's look at, first of all, Allah's trusts, right? And for this, you want to look at Surah 5, Ayat 15. If you are using a Yusuf Ali translation, it's probably Ayat number 17, you know, because they have slight differences. So if you look at Surah 5, Ayat 15, O people of the scripture, meaning Ahl al-Kitab. Yes, I'm going to come to that point as well in a minute, but first let's do something else. Now has come our messenger unto you, expounding unto you much of that which you used to hide in the scripture, and forgiving much. Now has come unto you light from Allah and a kitab-e-mubin. That last sentence, qad جاءكم من الله نور وكتاب مبين. First comes the word نور and then comes the word manifest book or كتاب مبين. So which two things have come from Allah? نور and the book. And you have already heard several times that this نور cannot be blown out. Surah 9, ayat 32, Surah 61, ayat 8. Twice, same words. Nobody can blow this light up. So this is from Allah. نور first, because the Prophet was first, and then the book was revealed to him. Please note the what comes, what precedes the other, right? The نور is first, and then the book. Even though it's a clear book, it says Mubin. But Mubin has more than one meaning. Okay? Now, these are the two trusts of Allah. Now, the question is, the Prophet was the representative of Allah. He was the spokesperson of Allah. The word natiq means somebody who speaks on behalf of Allah. And that's why the Quran is full of this word, kul, say, say. All the time the Prophet is commanded, say, say. Say on behalf of whom? On behalf of God. So when the time came for the Prophet to leave this physical world, what did he do? Those of you who have started reading the paper on Hazrat Ali, you will realize that at Ghadir-e Khum, in front of thousands of people, what did the Holy Prophet do? Which we discussed in the third part of the dua. What did the Holy Prophet do? He said, I am leaving behind me two things, two weighty. Yeah? Inni tarikum fi kumul sakalain. Kitab Allahi wa itrati. I am leaving behind me two weighty, significant things. The book of God, Kitabullah, and my progeny, itrati, itrat, progeny, he, my. So what did the Prophet do at Ghadir-e Khum? He also repeated what is Allah's trust. Two things, the light and the book. Yes, and these trusts are far more important than any material worldly trust that you can think of. Yes? Why? Because the Prophet, throughout his entire life, he made many, many statements about Maulana Ali. What did he say? Ali is with the Quran. Ali ma al Quran wa Quran ma al Ali. Ali is with the Quran and the Quran is with Ali. What else did he say? He said, I had to fight with the sword, yeah? Fight for the sake of the Tanzil of the Quran, and Ali will fight for the Ta'wil of the Quran. Yeah, so you can say that the Prophet is the Sahib-e Tanzil, the master or the custodian of Ta'wil, and Ali is the master of the Ta'wil or the custodian of Ta'wil, but not only Ali, his entire progeny of the chain of the light of Imams. They are all the custodian of the Ta'wil of the Quran. And this is why I sent out to you, I hope you all did get it, the preamble of the Constitution, just in case some of you not had a look at it, that paragraph B, if you look at paragraph B in the preamble of the Constitution, what does it say? You know, paragraph A talks about Tawheed and about Risalat, yes, and that the Prophet is the final Prophet of Allah, and that the Holy Quran is the final message of Allah, and it is universal and eternal. Okay? So that was absolute statement. And then paragraph B, in accordance with Shia doctrine, tradition, and interpretation of history, The Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam designated and appointed his cousin and son-in-law, Hazrat Maulana Ali, Amirul Mu'minin alayhi salam, to be the first imam to continue the ta'wil and ta'alim of Allah's final message and to guide the murids and proclaim that the imamah should continue by heredity to Hazrat Maulana Ali alayhi salam and his daughter Hazrat Bibi Fatima Tazara Khatun-e Jannat alayha salam. So you see how the Shia doctrine, the Shia interpretation of Islam, of the Quran, of our history, the Shia doctrine is exactly in keeping with what Allah has said in the Quran and what the Prophet has said in his hadith, that there are two trusts of Allah and his Prophet. And these two trusts are the light of Imamat and the Book of Allah. And I think last time I discussed with you during the question time, I think it was, we looked at Surah 25, Criterion of Furqan, and we looked at ayah number 30, in which the Prophet is complaining to God, Ya Rabbi, inna qawmi ittakhazu hazal Quran majura. The Prophet was complaining to God, indeed, this my own community is holding on to the Quran as a useless thing. Why did he do that? Because he knew that only a few would accept Maulana Ali's appointment and the rest would reject it. The rest would not only reject, but they will do what I had just given you in the human example. They will claim that trust themselves, for themselves. So amanat is where two things can happen. You can either fulfill the amanat, or you can really do khianat very strongly by saying, no, I'm the leader. I'm the one who should lead the community, not Ali. So for that, again, I want you to go back to the paper on Hazrat Ali. You know, I have all these were my objectives in writing this paper, right? Because in that paper, I have spelled it out that history tells us that as soon as the Prophet had said, Ali is the Mola, the one whose Mola I am, yeah? Immediately after that, who was the first one to congratulate Hazrat Ali? You know? It was Umar. Oh. Umar. Yeah, he said, Bakan, congratulations, O Ali. You have today become the master, the Mola of my Mola and the Mola of the Muslims. And then what happened? 3 months down the line, what did Umar do? You know, I don't even like to take the name because, you know, we have learned from Pir Nasir Kisra that the word which we use actually is a very wonderful word. It means Fulan. Such and such a one and such and such a one. And so 3 times, if you say Fulan, it stands for the 3 so-called caliphs of Islam. The Nasir Kisra doesn't mention them by name. He just said Fulanu, Fulandra. Yeah? What happened? Now, I want to talk a little bit about that in case there are some people here who still haven't read the paper on Hazrat Ali or have read it only superficially. When the Holy Prophet passed away from this world, this is Saudi Arabia. There was no refrigeration there 1400 years ago. Bodies needed to be buried immediately. So Hazrat Ali, who never left the Prophet's side from his childhood, is the one who is burying the Prophet. What do Fulano and Fulano do? These two Fulan, they are the fathers-in-law of the Holy Prophet. I hope you all realize that. One of them is the father of Aisha, the Prophet's so-called favorite wife, which I don't accept. And the other one is the father of Hafsa. You know, the two about whom there's a complaint in the Quran. So they are the Prophet's fathers-in-law. Instead of, you know, bearing him with dignity and all the due prayers, what do? They run off to a place called Sa'idah-e Bani Saqifa, a meeting hall. Yeah, and there are arguments between the Ansar and the Muhajirun, the emigrants and the helpers. And during this, Fulan stands up and he says, I propose that Fulan should be the caliph. And this is a so-called election that made the one of them the immediate caliph of the worldly side. They didn't accept, you know? I mean, look at the logic of this. The Holy Prophet had spent 63 years in bringing the faith of Islam to the world. 63 years he spent on establishing this complete religion of God, God's favor. You know, Surah 5, Ayah 32, this day have I completed your religion and completed my favors upon you. And these Fulanu say, there's no need for religious guidance anymore. Anybody can read the Quran and understand it. All we need is some administration for the material, the secular side, the physical world. What is lasting? The religion or the material world? You know, we have to be very, you know, logical. And we have to look at things squarely and not be taken in by people's stories, right? So, I want to share with you today what Maulana Rumi says about that. Yeah? This is Maulana Rumi. He says, I hope you will understand a few words of this Farsi first, because it's very beautiful. He says, and Sahaba, these companions, hubbe dunya dashtan. They were full of the love for the world. Hubbe dunya. I think you understand that, Farsi, but it's in our Gujarati as well. Hubbe dunya, love of the world. These Sahaba, these meaning, these two, the fathers-in-law, Fulanu and Fulanu. And what did they do? Mustafa bi kafan, bi guzashtan. They left Mustafa, the chosen of God, without his kafan, i.e. they didn't wait to bury him. They ran away to grab material power. And you know, I've got emotional talking about this. But look at Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah in his memoirs. Huh? How incisive in chapter 8 he says, the Shia of school of thought maintains that although direct divine inspiration ceased at the Prophet's death, the need of divine guidance continued. And this could not be left merely to millions of mortal men subject to the whims and gusts of passion and material necessity, capable of being momentarily but tragically misled by greed, oratory, or by the sudden desire for material advantage. These dangers were manifest in the period immediately following the Holy Prophet's death. Greed, oratory, the sudden desire for material advantage, grab power. Look how beautifully, logically, Maulana Sultan Shah sets it out in his memoirs. Divine guidance cannot be left to the election of people. How can it be? How can it be? It can't be like the Roman Catholics when the Pope passes away or resigns or whatever, that the school of cardinals gets together, closes the doors, and then, you know, has an election. You can't have that for divine guidance. Divine guidance is only for divine guidance because God declares who should be the successor of the Prophet. And later on, in the same paragraph, second paragraph, the paragraph after it, Maulana Sultan Shah says that it is a Shia belief, always has been, that divine leadership, power, and guidance manifested themselves in Maulana Ali, in Hazrat Ali. I think you should read the memoirs chapter again and again. These sort of paragraphs should be read many, many times, you know, 50, 60, 80 times, until those words become part of your vocabulary. Okay? So now here, this is the real meaning of breaking the trust, right? Or fulfilling them. Is that either you are denying the rightful owner, as happened. The rightful owner was Maulana Ali, but others usurped his role, usurped, right? Grabbed it. And not only that, by usurping this power, they claim this leadership for themselves. This is the meaning of breaking amanat and performing khianat. Okay, it's very, very important. And recently in my other class, we have been looking at Shahabuddin Shah's Risala Dar Hakikatuddin, the true meaning of religion. And look what he says, right? This is on page 30. He says, ordinary people whose duty is only to obey the command of God have no capacity to act as they wish or to elect as their leader anyone whom they want, disregarding the real one. So here, breaking the amanat is disregarding the real claimant and going after the false one. Leadership, which is the real meaning of the term imamah, obviously is a matter of the greatest possible importance, which cannot be left to the decision of the mob. It cannot be left to the mob. This is not the government, right? I mean, look, let's look at the example of America. They're going to suffer for generations now. It was a majority who elected Trump. This is not a government. This is religion. This is a world of the soul. This is about our eternal life. Okay, and you know, the funny thing is that the Quran is always dismissing the majority. It says, well, walakin aksarahum la ya'qilun. The majority of them do not use their intellect. The majority of them do not reflect. The majority of them are ungrateful. That's the whole tenor of the Holy Quran, again and again. Because, you know, our Jamaat, some of the youngsters are very worried, like, you know, how come we are so few? No, in God's eyes, the minority are correct in this matter, not the majority. Okay? So, the last part of this, nor knowingly betray your trust, right? This ayat where it says that, amanatikum wa antum ta'lamun. Yeah? O you who believe, betray not the trust of Allah and the Messenger, nor knowingly betray your trusts. So our trusts are exactly those that Allah has given and the Prophet has given. And we should not knowingly, you know, deliberately, being aware of what is the truth, denying it, and then breaking those trusts, right? That's the meaning of it. Because what happens if you deny the rightful imam? Yeah? Supposing, you know, it's happening now, some Ismailis are going back, you know, regressing. What happens? So you say, no, 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 Father Imam is too Western, he looks like a European and he can't be the imam. Okay, you know, because these are the sort of arguments which I use. Okay, fine. What happens when you do that? The Holy Quran closes to you. You do not get the inner meaning of the Quran. finished. You become what the Quran calls deaf, blind, with locks on their hearts. They don't understand. So if he denied the rightful position of the imam, that's the end of our spiritual guidance. Our soul is going to be left hanging. We will not reach salvation of the soul. We will not be given that paradise which we talked about in Surah Tawbah. And then what happens? Because, you know, why have we been born in this human manifestation? We have a mission, a goal, an objective. So we will not be able to fulfill that objective without the imam. Because the imam is here not for himself. He is here to help us. So if we deny the imam, it's only we ourselves who are in loss, kasara. You know, that's the word Musabai also repeated from my previous set. Loss, total loss, loss of the soul. He who breaks his bayya does it to the loss of his own self, not to the prophet or the imam. You know, this, the onus is on us. Right? And nobody can access the knowledge of the Quran, because the Holy Prophet had said it very clearly. I am the city of knowledge. Ali is the gate. Whoever wishes to acquire knowledge should enter through Ali. Okay? I am the house of wisdom. Ali is the door. Yeah, and we look at it, right? When we look at Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, that the Ba, the very first letter of Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, used to be Bayt, a house with a door. And that door is now dropped to the bottom as a nukta, a point. And this point is where it all begins and it all ends. The Imam of the time, from the line of Mawla Ali. Yes, and I just want to, I think I may have used it before, but I will use it again. 1967 Farman from Maulana Fazal Imam at the Bombay Ismaili Association gathering. Esoteric means that what is written is there, but its meaning is not there to everyone. It is there only to those who are part of our Jamaat. And it's all there. If we Ismailis take the trouble to study the Quran and the Farman of the Imam together, and also the Ginans, Gurabina Gor Andera, Gurabina Gor Andera, right? And there is no light without the divine light. Your intellect, your soul, even your physical self will all be in darkness, right? Because these are trusts. They are the trusts of Allah and of the Prophet, right? They are very serious, very serious. If we really value our own soul and our intellect, then we cannot dismiss them. And we need to be aware that, you know, every time we do nafarmanis, we are doing a partial khianat, yeah? Okay, I thought that this is quite a heavy subject, right? So I won't do the rest of the part. I'll have to do it next time, because I think there may be questions on this about amanat. There is I get the feeling that this word amanat is not really understood as it is in this ayat, and the reason why it is in our fifth part of the dua. So we should have clarity today, yeah? Okay, Rosemary, so I'll stop talking now and we can have questions. It's exactly 1 o'clock. So this is well in time.
Thank you, Alwaisa. I know Karima had sent a few questions to you. I know you've addressed one of them. I don't know whether we want to go through them first.
No, they are all not relevant to this topic. That okay. One was the most relevant, and she, Karima, had the question that is the solen amano? So my answer is that no, the sun is not an amano. An amano is what has God given us? He has given us a human life. So to return this amanat, we need to follow the prophet and the imam's guidance completely. Then we fulfill our amanat. Amanat is not something where you do half the things and don't do half the things, right? You know, so if somebody says that the song is an amanat, that all of our baraka comes from the imam, from God. But we are only returning a token of it. That's not amanat, is it? The song, dua, these are called in our Shia interpretation, they are called the pillars of faith. Whereas Noor and the book, the two, the Prophet and Allah, first of all, Allah, Tawheed, Prophet, Risalat, then Ali, Walayat, which we did in the second part of the dua, and then the present Imam, they are the foundation of religion. Then on the foundation, you have the pillars like, obedience, devotion to the Imam, purification, Salat, prayer, Psalm, fasting, Hajj, and Jihad. Those are pillars. You can't call them amanat. Yeah? Amanat is the foundation. You have strong foundation. Nina Merchant has her hand up. Yeah.